fact, you know, we're in the middle of October, which is, of course, a big month for people who are fans of horror movies. And I, of course, am a fan of horror movies. And I actually meant to do a bunch of episodes of this, but life kind of gets in the way. So I had a bunch of crap I had to deal with in September, so I couldn't prep for it. And then October kind of hit me hard, and I did a movie marathon, a monsterthon with my kids, and then I had a movie marathon just last week. So I've been extremely busy, but now we can actually jump in and do one of these second reel episodes. And I've got as my guest today is Steve Reeves, also known as Gabe, who one of the frequent commenters and callers and emailers on the Fat Guys show, Fat Guys in the Movies. Welcome to the show, Steve, again.
Thanks. Great to be back.
You, of course, you were on the actual Fat Guys show, the Fat Guys in the Movies show, but we also did a couple second reel episodes earlier this year where we were complaining about found footage in one of them, in particular the movie Chronicle, and how much we hate the genre and hated that movie. I'm sure you remember that.
But not as bad as the follow-up, Project X.
We're not going to talk about that. I will not pollute my brain with thoughts of Project X. But today we're going to be talking about horror movie anthologies, which is a big it's sort of its own sub-genre. And there have been anthology movies before, but really – horror and science fiction lend themselves most to anthologies because that's where you would get anthology television, where you had like Alfred Hitchcock Presents and Twilight Zone and Night Gallery, and even like more, you know, like The Outer Limits. And when you had the Showtime series, Poltergeist, The Legacy, and you had the Friday the 13th series, the anthology TV shows, you almost never get you had like Love American Style in the 70s, which was sort of love stories, comedies, sitcom type things. But horror movies, horror and science fiction as a genre lend themselves to the anthology. And so we're going to be talking a little bit about that and just sort of some of the ones, the big ones over the years and the kind of the ones that kind of rise to the top in our estimation. But before we get started, Steve, why don't you tell everybody where you're from, what you do, where they can find you, and all that good stuff.
Well, I'm originally from New York, but I live in Arizona, mm-hmm. and you can find me at my website at www.thesar3000.com mm-hmm. or thesar3000.com, and I write reviews. I'm just an amateur reviewer, and I haven't really written many in the recently, but I have a whole bunch of archived ones on there, and I'm looking forward to doing more of them. I just watched the whole Bond series, so I have to write those.
You were not as fond of Bond as I was. I noticed in some of your reviews of it. You had a tough time making it through the 70s.
I had a tough time making it the first 15 of them. No, actually, I liked it when Timothy Dalton taken over. That's when the meat actually cooked pretty well. But then I didn't grow up on the original Bond series like my father did. So I do like the more modern Bond, and I'm definitely looking forward to Skyfall, but I really liked it when Timothy Dalton took over. But as you pointed out to me privately, whatever the first Bond you liked is usually the one that you stick with, and that's Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, definitely.
But I like to write a lot of different reviews and opinions on TV shows and movies, and you can find a lot of them on there, or some of my humor antidotes.
You're all over Facebook about your reviews and that sort of thing, and your general commentary on life, the world as we know it.
Yes, sarcasm mostly, but yeah.
But you're also a huge horror movie fan. That's one of the things. That's one of your passions. Would that be fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. I grew up on horror, and actually, I had to grow up mostly on horror previews on TV because I wasn't allowed to watch the actual rated R stuff. So any kind of 30-second promo ad was my hero, and I would play it over again in my mind.
Well, there are some there are some trailers, especially in the 80s. Some horror movies are actually better as trailers. One we just recently live tweeted a couple months ago was Motel Hell, which just had the most terrifying television spots when I was a kid. You know, I was like 10 when that came out, and terrifying television spots, and you watch the movie, and it's just fucking terrible.
Well, the movie, yeah, the movie's pretty bad. I actually haven't seen the spots yet, so I'll have to look those up. But one that stuck through my mind my whole life is Visiting Hours, where the hospital, like the lights kept going out until there was a skull on the hospital. And they had many different, actually, Visiting Hours TV spots, if you look at the DVD. And those creeped me out as a kid.
I just went to a 24-hour horror movie marathon just this last week, and I took my son. And one of the things I love the most about going to the marathons isn't as much the movies. And it's cool to see the movies. And it's some movies you have never seen projected, or it's neat to see them actually on film, projected on film on the big screen. So that's always kind of nice to see. But I love the assortment of old trailers they put together. And that's what makes it amazing. And they actually snuck in the fake trailer for Don't from
Go. Oh yeah.
They snuck that in and that was just, it's such a brilliant trailer because it is in fact exactly like, I think Don't Look Now is the name of the movie that it's based on, that the trailer's based on. So it's a brilliant trailer. And I love old trailers. I don't like modern trailers because they give too much away. And old trailers did too, but it's, you know, if you haven't seen, you know, if you're seeing a trailer for, well, they showed a trailer for Phantom of the Paradise because that's one of the movies they showed. You've had plenty of opportunity to see Phantom of the Paradise. If you haven't seen Phantom of the Paradise now, you can't complain about spoilers because the movie came out in 1974. Or Suspiria. You know, Suspiria has a great trailer. If you've ever seen that, and that's,
no, I actually haven't.
It's a neat trailer because it's not terribly representative of the film, but it's accurate. It is weird. So, you know, that's a lot of fun. But we're going to be talking about the actual horror anthologies. We're not going to go completely back. I know there were some from longer ago, and of course you have your TV shows as well. But we're going to just kind of talk 70s because that's really where the 70s and then in the 80s are when they really became huge. But the first ones I want to hit, there are two movies, came out in 1972, and they're both very similar films. I think they're both rated PG, which is kind of amazing considering – they're not terribly violent or over the top or gory, and PG meant something very different in the early 70s than it does now. But those two movies are Tales from the Crypt and Asylum, and you've had a chance to watch both of them recently.
Yeah, I watched Tales from the Crypt last week, and I thought it was extremely ahead of its time.
Yeah.
I mean, it had to be the first one that showed a killer Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Because I believe that Black Christmas came out 2 years later, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right, 74, yeah.
And so they actually showed Killer Santa Claus, and that was actually pretty well done.
Yeah.
The acting was very well. The suspense was up. The twists were there. And aside from the clothing, you could actually watch it today. I really believe that it's actually a timeless movie.
Yeah, it's a neat movie. I actually got to see that projected at a horror marathon about 10 years ago. And that was neat to see in the theater. And what's neat about that movie, it also has named stars in it. Joan Collins is in the Santa Claus episode. You've got Peter Cushing in the Valentine's episode. It's the four different segments on that. The four segments are good. Now, some are the most memorable ones, are the Peter Cushing and the Joan Collins one. Whereas in Joan Collins, of course, taking on the murder of Santa Claus, and Peter Cushing is the old caretaker who's being bullied and pushed away by people in the neighborhood and sort of shun him and target him. This rich family targets him and he gets his they get their comeuppance in their traditional EC horror comics from the 50s. That we later saw brought to life. I'm not sure if all of them got the treatment, but I do know the Santa Claus one got a treatment. Was I think the pilot episode for Tales from the Crypt when it was on HBO.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that they carried it over to that.
Yeah. That was what was neat about the HBO series Tales from the Crypt is because those were, in fact, honest to God episodes from they're honest to God stories from the old EC horror comics. And that's, I think was really cool. You know, some of them came from like Shock Suspense or something like that. But really Tales from the Crypt, the movie kicked that up. Now there was also a Vault of Horror, which I think was the next year. I actually haven't seen that yet. I have the DVD sitting on my shelf, but life got in the way. So I didn't watch it. Would you have anything else to say about Tales from the Crypt, or you want to talk a little bit about Asylum?
I do, but one more thing about Tales from the Crypt. That first one, even though the whole movie itself I liked, but that very first one with Joan Collins and the Santa Claus was pretty pretty entertaining. She had this dilemma. She killed her husband for insurance reasons. Spoiler, sorry, 1972. Yeah. And she looked at she knew the killer was outside, but she looked at the body that she just killed, and it's a pretty heavy body for her to dispose of. And then she had to look at her daughter that's up in the upstairs. So it was actually, in the 20 minutes that they had, it was actually pretty entertaining how she has to solve this problem, even though she is a murderer herself.
And it's actually very accurate to the I've read the original story from the EC Horror comics. I've got it in an old – back in the day, they would actually have paperback-sized trade paperback books, the small pocketbooks, and they print comic books in those. And so they were like, you have to hold the book horizontally, and you could look at them, and it was black and white. They didn't reprint them in color. But I have one of those old Vault of Horror or Tales from the Crypt books that has the original story, and I've watched it. And I'm like, that was what's so brilliant about these is they – update them very accurately and much more than you'd see some of, you know, short stories can be brought into life into movies very accurately, whereas the novels you have to, you know, trim and cut and change. So that's always very good. Now Asylum, I haven't seen that in a long time, but I always loved that because in particular the episode And Now the Screaming Starts, I think. That was actually another series, I think. But what are your thoughts on Asylum?
Well, I just watched it last night, so I have never seen it before. It was pretty interesting. It was a little bit ahead of its time. It was a little gory. You just mentioned PG. I didn't know that it was actually PG.
They showed it to me in school when I was like in junior high. They showed it to us as like a special thing for Halloween or whatever, which is – I mean, you wouldn't get away with doing that now.
Oh, no. Not even with permission slips. It was actually pretty entertaining. They pretty much had to guess who the doctor was, and if you kind of guessed who it was throughout, but they went through all the different stories, and they had this one episode, the very first one, with the dismembered body that was in plastic, and actually the poster itself has the head of the person that was dismembered, and it kind of rolls against the floor, and it kind of has a little more power than it really should. So it was kind of a little silly, but I'm sure it was a little more scary back then.
Yeah. So what's funny is, as somebody, I grew up in the 70s. I was born in 1971. So even though I was a little young for these, the look and the feel of the 70s has a very certain warmth to it, to me. And so it's fun watching these movies that were very low rent back then. But still, it just felt – these were the kind of movies I saw either in the theater or on TV, on reruns. So they really capture my childhood. Even though they're horrific stories, they do remind me of my childhood. And that's one of the things I love about this stuff from the 70s.
Oh, 100% agree. And I was only born 3 years after you. So I was born in 1974. So I also grew up during these times. And even when I – came of age, or I could actually watch TV on my own or make my own choices on TV, they were still showing reruns of these type of movies or replays of these movies because there was no VCRs back then.
And the old late night horror show, or the late night movie show, like on Friday and Saturday nights, I'd watch stuff like Frogs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love Frogs. The ending freaked me out with the frog that gulped the person's hand.
Yeah, Sam Elliott was in that. Paul P. Yeah. Another one from the 70s that we wanted to hit is a TV movie, actually. It was originally a TV movie and meant to be a pilot for an anthology series, and that would be Trilogy of Terror. It came out in 1975. This was a movie I watched on your recommendation as we were prepping for the show. What's interesting about this one is I had plenty of opportunities to see it. Over the years, it was at video stores or whatever, and I always kind of poo-pooed it because it was a TV movie. And to me, TV movies, especially if you talk 70s and 80s, were of lower production value. They weren't that good. Although you can go back and watch them. In fact, Warner Archive a couple of years ago released like the original Don't Be Afraid of the Dark and Bad Ronald, which are TV movies on DVD. And they're low rent and they're cheesy, but this in particular, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, is pretty scary for just being some crappy little movie from the 70s on television. And I felt Trilogy of Terror was very much the same thing.
Yeah. I saw that as a kid. It probably was a late night, like you mentioned, when my parents were asleep and I had my little black and white TV in my room. Mm-hmm. and I could only watch the late night horror movies at 1 a.m. When I had to keep the volume like at 1. I had to keep the volume as low as it possibly could because we had a vent between my room and my parents' room. But the Trilogy of Terror terrified me. Now, if you watch it as an adult, the third story in particular, I can't even remember the first two stories, but the third story in particular is a little Zuni doll, if I'm pronouncing that right. A little doll with the razor-sharp teeth. You could all but see the person holding the doll, shaking it back and forth as it was so-called running down the hallway.
Yeah.
But as a kid, yeah, that little doll is chasing you with razor-sharp teeth, and you have no place to run. You know, that's going to be terrifying. I'll never, ever forget that story.
Yeah.
I will always have that embedded in my mind, and that what makes it terrifying for me.
Yeah, and actually it's still somewhat effective now. I mean, you can tell it's bad puppetry, bad 70s television puppetry. But the doll is incredibly well designed, and they shoot around it well enough that you can kind of break that suspension of disbelief and keep that up there. What I found interesting about the movie, like you said, you don't remember the other two segments. What it was is there were three segments, and each one starred Karen Black. And I found that a really interesting choice that they didn't – it wasn't like each segment was on its own and there was no tie together on any of them. The big connection between each one is Karen Black was the star of each one. And I kind of dug that. I would love to see them do that again and like take – you know, some icon of horror of some sort, you know, get like Brink Stevens and do like a Trilogy of Terror now. And even though Brink Stevens is, I think she's in her 50s, you know, still put her in the show, that kind of thing. Or take a modern scream queen, like take, who's a little girl from the Halloween movies, Danielle Harris. I mean, she's in her 30s now, but you know, put her and have her star in like each episode and have them completely unrelated. And I thought that was just a really neat framing of the stories. That's the continuing through, not a crypt keeper or somebody on the outside kind of leading you from story to story to story.
Yeah, and I also believe that each one was named after her character.
Yeah.
Like the third one with the doll is actually named Emily, which I just watched before the show tonight. I rewatched that segment, and even though, again, I made a comment about the hand on the puppet, it is terrifying. It is in that little doll screaming. But you just imagine seeing that through the eyes of a 4 or 5 year old.
Oh, yeah.
That wants to be scared, that's not allowed to be scared, and that makes it even more scary.
Somebody,
and you're watching
in the 70s where you haven't gotten modern special effects now, and that was as good as you could get on TV.
Well, yeah, we didn't have internet, so or any other means if you're 4 or 5 or 6 years old of getting out there seeing anything else.
We had to watch television with just a cardboard box. We threw pictures in it, and that's how we did it. We liked it.
In black and white.
Hanging on there. Yeah, we didn't even have color crayons. We had pencil and gray paper.
As we go into the 80s, which kind of kicks off early in the decade with what I consider one of the top anthology movies ever made, to me, sort of what set the template and kicked things off in the 80s in sort of broader resurgence of these back, and that is Creepshow, which is, of course, directed by George Romero, you know, zombie legend, and then at the time had done Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and now it was written by Stephen King with four stories that he adapted from old short stories of his and one original story. He wrote the screenplay, and I found this not just one of the best anthology movies. It is, in my opinion, one of the best comic book movies ever made, because Romero used like framing of the comic books, and he really used the comic book as the through story. And of course, it also has Tom Atkins in it, even though his mustache isn't on it.
I completely agree with you. It's got to be number one. Even though it's a lot of comedy, but a lot of irony. It also got me hooked on the point of a cartoon being very, very scary. Mm-hmm. Like the wraparound story is a cartoon of, if I'm not mistaken, the Venus Flytrap.
That is episode.
Don't tell me that's part two.
That's Creepshow 2.
Okay.
You brought up Creepshow 2. You've been meaning to get that into the conversation. During show prep, you were of course extolling the virtues of Creepshow 2, and I was poo-pooing you. and you were talking about how great The Raft was. Have you ever read the original Stephen King story, The Raft?
Spoiler. He doesn't make it to shore. He actually just looks at the glob and falls in. It turns into a rainbow, and that's what makes him at peace and falls in. Yes, I have read the book. I told my boss about it today, and I told him that we were going to talk about it tonight, and that I love The Raft, and I read the book. The book's only like 4 or 5, maybe 14 pages long. It's a short story by Stephen King, and I've read it. It was a very good book, but they made it for dramatic purposes for her, the guy to swim to shore, get on shore, and then the blobs, you know, oil slick, jump over and grab him.
Yeah.
Yes, I read both the book and the show, and that I loved the movie Creepshow Part 1 more overall.
Okay.
But my favorite story overall is The Raft, just because of how it reminds me of The Blob. And we disagree on the remake of The Blob, which I did like.
Oh, it's so awesome.
I did like it, but it's not as what I want it to be. And that was the closest thing I could get to a new version of The Blob. And it was scary because the four kids, or young adults, no one knew they were out there.
Yeah.
And it looked like Arizona.
One of the things that's interesting about the Raft is it gets very rapey. in the middle, which is weird because there's a sex scene in the book at the same point with the same characters. Yeah. But it's a little more consensual there's no actual raping going on, but had the blob not interceded, there probably would have been.
Yeah, okay.
He fondles her boobies inappropriately. I was not a big fan of Creepshow 2 just because I thought it pulled – The Raft was a decent story, but I just thought Chief Woodenhead was just tired, and it only had 3 stories in it, and the other one was basically – wasn't it just another Hitchhiker story?
Hitchhiker – I can't remember the phrase. Oh, he keeps saying the same phrase over and over.
My way. I think it was going my way, lady, or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Actually, the other 2 stories I didn't care for, I guess the Venus Flytrap, which I thought was in part 1. I like that story, but you're right. Overall, part 2 really sucked. I actually have not gone to part 3 yet. I started part 3 and turned it off in the first story.
I think, actually, here's an interesting Bond movie connection. I believe Lois Childs, who played Holly Goodhead in Moonraker, played the adulterous woman in Going My Way. I believe that's who played that. I'm not 100% sure, though, so don't quote me on that. But Creepshow, I loved Creepshow. I love the cockroach story with E.G. Marshall because I hate cockroaches, and it's that terrifying nature of the cockroach. That's one that does make my skin crawl just because they're real cockroaches in that movie. I mean
– Oh, there are.
Damn. It's nasty.
I didn't know that. I didn't know they were real. That's my favorite story of the 5.
Have you seen it lately? Because, I mean, they use fake cockroaches too, but they use real cockroaches. And cockroaches are just the most horrible creatures on the planet.
No, I completely agree. And what that story, I actually watched it on TV when I used to watch TV on movies on TV, which I don't anymore. But I watched it, and they actually cut the last segment. So I watched the entire movie to get to the cockroach story. They cut it, edited it for space.
Probably for space. Also language. That thing is loaded with swearing. That's an incredible – and I don't know how they would cut around because he's dropping F-bombs left and right, and he's very crass with what he says. So it could have been that too. The other thing I love about Creepshow, it had 5 stories to it, which meant that they were brief, and they came there. And if you were kind of like, I'm not interested in the – I'm not interested in the tide, tide
– This tide would be over you.
Yeah, tide or I'm not interested in The Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill, which stars Stephen King. In a couple minutes, they're done. So I thought it was one of the most briskly paced anthology stories. And it's disappointing when you see a movie like Two Evil Eyes or even something like – a little disappointing with something like, you know, we mentioned Trilogy of Terror, which is just 3 or 2. I'm like, 5 episodes. That was fantastic. Mm-hmm. So the next one we'll talk about – we'll talk very briefly. Nightmares, which kind of played off the Creepshow angle, because Creepshow was kind of a bit of a phenomenon back in 1982, and Nightmares was terrible. This is not what we're recommending.
Oh, good. I'm so glad you said that. I actually, you put that on the list, and I thought that you actually liked it. Oh, I hated that movie. The first one was over and done with before you knew it, and I thought that was, that was it. And then they went into a Tron-like story.
Yeah, the video was Tron-like. Yeah, I don't know if you get that. They're basically calling me like a, you know, I have a Schwarzenegger-like body. Is you know, or a Stallone-like body in the sense that I have two arms and two legs. Otherwise, the similarities in there. Nightmares was stupid. The Emilio Estevez story was the one with the video game that came after him. Then it has Lance Hendrickson fighting a truck in one scene.
Oh, yes. He was a priest that didn't believe in God anymore, so he wanted to go out on his own. And it reminded me of that truck story.
Yeah.
What was it, Stephen King or Steven Spielberg or George Lucas?
Well, okay, you had Steven Spielberg did Duel, which was Duel. Truck against the driver of the car. Stephen King wrote a story called Trucks that was made in Maximum Overdrive, where the trucks become sentient and attack humans, and it was later remade as Trucks in the 90s. So there's I don't know if George Lucas had anything to do with anything with Trucks. He did American Graffiti.
I was thinking of THX.
Oh, THX. Okay. So yeah, Nightmares isn't that good. But the next one in line, I mean, this is talking the next year of 1984, Twilight Zone. You had this 1-2 punch of Creepshow in 1982, Twilight Zone in 1984. Unfortunately, Twilight Zone is saddled with the tragedy where Vic Morrow and two young children got killed in the production when a helicopter crashed on them. And that's sad, and it's terrible, and that will always weight the movie down. But on the whole, it's still a fantastic movie with four parts directed. And it was neat about it to have four different directors, which they've done before. I'd mentioned, we're not going to talk much about it, but Two Evil Eyes did that. I think it's Dario Argento and George Romero each directed a segment of that. But in Twilight Zone, yeah, John Landis, Steven Spielberg, Joe Dante, and George Miller. So that's one of my – I recently showed that to my kids, and it's a hell of a lot of fun. And it's a neat adaptation of four already existing Twilight Zone stories. Oh, three, actually. I'm sorry. The Bigot was not an original story. That's the one with Vic Morrow, although it sort of has similarities to some of Rod Serling's original stories.
Yeah, my parents and other generations about my parents loved the William Shatner story.
Yes.
The plane. I wasn't familiar with that because I didn't grow up on Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
My personal favorite was the Do You Want to See Something Scary?
Oh, the Rapunzel story.
Yeah, I liked that. But my personal favorite and one of my all-time favorite anthology stories was the kid that had 1,000 wishes or unlimited wishes. Of course, what kid did not want to have that many wishes?
But what's so brilliant, as a parent, I watch that, and you're like, as adorable and wonderful as children are, you don't want them to have ultimate power because they don't make good decisions.
Oh, no, that's true. But I have not seen it since I was a kid. So I related with the kid and wanted to have a house full of my own wishes and stuff and actually have a guardian, the teacher that came in and brought him to the light. Yeah. I would like to I've had that, but I actually don't know if I really want to watch it again because I enjoy it, all the memories as a kid.
It still holds up. What's interesting about that segment is it stars one of the actresses in it is what's her name? Name's escaping me, but it's the girl who does the voice of Lisa Simpson.
Oh, okay.
Not Lisa Simpson. I'm sorry, Bart Simpson. Nancy Cartwright. She plays the sister Ethel. And it's before she started doing the voice for The Simpsons, so she never really – so it's not like she's trying to disguise the voice out. So you hear – when she talks, it's Bart talking. It's the weirdest looking thing in the world. And then on top of it, it also stars Kevin McCarthy in that, and he was a fantastic actor. Love that guy. And I personally wouldn't mind having a Kathleen Quinlan from 1984 that I could just take out and play with whenever I wanted to, but for totally different reasons.
Well, I saw that long before The Simpsons was even thought of, so I don't remember very much of it, but I do remember loving that episode. The whole movie itself is good.
Yeah.
But I love that episode. I'll never forget that as a kid.
Yeah, I recently showed my kids some old Twilight Zone episodes, picked and choose, and I said, because I want to show them some of them. And I showed him the all the old episodes that were in the movie, and then we got the movie out and watched it, and it was fun to watch. And yeah, the wraparound story with Dan Aykroyd and Albert Brooks is brilliant as well.
Oh, that freaked me out.
The next one on the list, and this is we're still in the 80s, is Cat's Eye, which is 1985, which is kind of the unofficial sequel to Creepshow. It was a follow-up with Dino De Laurentiis doing another anthology story written by Stephen King, and I forget who directed it. But it was several stories in the wraparound of a cat. What's interesting is the wraparound story was actually edited. It's the story of this stray cat is kind of on his way to find this girl and help her out. But there's no history to it. You don't know any reason about it. And just sort of this cat just shows up and starts doing it. And it ends with the story with him and Drew Barrymore, the cat and Drew Barrymore, because back when Drew Barrymore, you know, was snorting coke in Studio 4, which he was like 9. But what's interesting about the movie is it originally started with the background of this story with the mother of Drew Barrymore's characters chasing after the cat with like a gun, trying to kill it. And they determined that to be too offensive to audience, because I believe this is a PG-13 movie. And then they and so they cut that out so you don't get the context. But it has some great old, again, taking Steven Spielberg, Stephen King stories, bringing them to life on the big screen, stuff like Quitter's Inc. and The Ledge. And I don't remember the name of the one, but it was about the cat stealing the breath and fighting this little demon.
Well, the name of the director is Lewis Teague.
Lewis Teague did that one. Okay.
And it was the screenplay writer was Stephen King. What I remember most from this I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, he wrote the story of the girl and the cat. He wrote that for Drew Barrymore after she was in Firestarter.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense. The one that I remember the most is Quitter's Inc.
Yeah.
I actually really like that story. I don't know. Maybe at the time when I saw it, I vowed never to smoke, and those things changed.
Out for you.
Not very good, but I have quit since, and I'm glad I did because my whole family is still alive.
Well, that's good. Did they cut off your finger or anything? Again, this was another one that had some big names in it. Alan King was in it, and James Woods was in the Quitter's Inc. scene. Of course, Drew Barrymore was really huge at that time as a star, it had some really good names in it. It's a neat little movie. Did not do well at all. It was in that string of Dino De Laurentiis, Stephen King adaptations where none of them really clicked and made much money.
Yeah. Robert Hayes was in it too. Don't forget.
That's right. He played the guy on the ledge.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. I've read that book. Yeah. Well, short story.
Yeah. Yeah. Short story. And then wrapping up the 80s, you had From a Whisper to a Scream, which is terrible. And the only reason there's three reasons I watched this. One was it's an anthology movie, and I'm like, oh, I'll watch that because we're going to be talking about this. Two, it has Vincent Price in it, and I was kind of on a little bit of a Vincent Price kick recently. I watched House of Wax, and I said, oh, I want to watch another Vincent Price movie, so I watched this. But this was done later in his life, and he just kind of did kind of a walk-on performance, and afterwards he's like said he denounced the movie and said it was terrible, rightfully so. And then the other reason is because it was on Netflix, instant, so I watched it. It's not a very good anthology horror story, so I just want to at least say something about it since I wasted time to watch it, and I urge you not to.
No, I haven't seen it, so I have nothing to say about it.
Okay.
Except you said not to see it.
Yes, don't see it. Don't see it. The next one is – now we're moving into the 90s, and so you see it sort of wane in anthology. Like I said, kind of the 80s was the heyday of these, and you still see these showing up, but they started to kind of hit more direct-to-video. But one that did go to the big screen was Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, which is, of course, based on the Tales from the Dark Side TV show, which was an anthology TV show back in the 80s. And I believe it was originally supposed to be a Creepshow television show, I think.
It was supposed to be Creepshow 3.
Was it supposed to be?
It said AKA, IMDb says it's AKA Creepshow 3.
Okay, I think they had a rights issue because I think what happened was Laurel Entertainment made Creepshow and then Creepshow 2, and then they wanted to make a TV show based on Creepshow, but they couldn't get the rights, so they just changed it to Tales from the Dark Side because Romero was involved in it, and Stephen King did a couple stories, and they had other big names like I think Wes Craven directed stuff and Sean Cunningham and people like that. But they made their own thing, and so then when they made a new movie, it was very much like Creepshow. Because it had a wraparound story and it was an anthology. And I believe Stephen King, he wrote at least one of the stories, which I believe was The Cat from Hell, was what he wrote. But this one also had some pretty big names. It had – at the time, you know, it had Christian Slater, who of course is in everything direct-to-video now. But back then he was and you also had Deborah Harry, who was Blondie playing the evil witch in the wraparound story. You had Radon Chong in one of the stories. This was, I thought, kind of this breed of filmmaking that went a little more serious as you kind of moved into the 90s before things got campy again in a very 90s sort of way. Were you a big fan of the Tales from the Dark Side movie?
Actually, I was. Until today, I haven't seen it in a very, very long time, so I just kind of skimmed through it. And yeah, I remember all the big stars. Recognized right away Steve Buscemi and Julianne Moore.
That's right. Julianne Moore was in this. Yes. She's very early rolling for her.
Yeah. And I remember, I can't believe how much I remember this. I haven't seen this in years. I didn't even think I had seen it until I just skimmed through it before our broadcast. Mm-hmm. And I remember a lot of this movie, The Mummy and The Lot, the Box. And of course, the opening, much like the TV show, the same opening as the TV show, yeah, always creeped me out with the transposed picture of the woods.
Yeah.
So that always creeps me out.
A little shout out here during this, even though we're sort of outside of the decade. I had on Fat Guys of the Movies, I had Michael Neal, who directed this movie called The Drive-In Horror Show, which is available. You can check it out. If you go to Infinite Santa, his Twitter handle is Infinite Santa because he does another series on that. But look that up on Twitter and you should be able to find information, or type or Google search Drive-In Horror Show. And it's an anthology movie. It really has that Tales from the Dark Side feel to it. It's like four episodes, and some are better than others, as in any anthology story. But it's a neat little anthology story. It really felt like these old anthology series, like I said, like Tales from the Dark Side, these older Tales from the Crypt kind of movies from the 70s. So if you haven't had the chance to check that out, you should see it. We've talked about it before on the show. But yeah, Tales from the Dark Side, great show on television, great movie. And then the only other one we're really talking about in the 90s is I'm reluctantly talking about Tales from the Hood. And you haven't seen this, have you?
I have not seen it, no.
Yeah, this one was – there was this push in the 90s to do – to sort of urban up some of these horror stories. And you saw that in shows like what they did a Halloween, you know, the mid to late 90s into the 2000s, you know, they do Leprechaun in the Hood. They did Halloween Resurrection. And that suddenly it's like, you have to go through so many sequels, they have to take place in the ghetto and it's going to star like Coolio or something like that. Tales from the Hood was another anthology story with, I think, Clarence Williams played sort of the Crypt Keeper type character. And these aren't that good. Now, I think Snoop Dogg did a movie like this as well, which was
Bones.
But was that a single movie, or was that
Yes.
Okay. So
it was a singular character the entire movie.
I love how you immediately jump on that. Oh yeah, Snoop Dogg. Yeah, totally did Bones.
Well, he didn't do too many movies. I mean, he does guest starring, but he didn't do too many movies on his own. So, yeah, I remember that. And that Plane movie he was in, but that wasn't horror.
Yeah.
The Soul Plane.
Soul Plane. Soul Plane. I liked Soul Plane. I thought that was a funny movie.
I haven't seen it, but I have seen Snakes on a Plane.
Yes. Yeah. Snakes in the movie, though. But yeah, Tales from the Hood, I guess you could see that one. It wasn't that good. It got into that mid-90s campiness where a lot of the stuff, and maybe in 10 years, 20 years, I'll look back on the stuff a little more fondly from the mid-90s. But to me, a lot of stuff from the mid-90s just plain doesn't hold up anymore. it was at a time as special effects and the tone of films was changing, and so we're sort of in this weird netherworld that doesn't know what it's trying to be.
You're absolutely right. They were kind of like reserving. They were holding back. They weren't as gruesome as they could be. They didn't know where they wanted to be, just like a politician. They just kind of wherever the audience wanted them to be, and they never wanted to actually present themselves as they really should be.
Yeah, yeah. So I think we got that with the 90s. So let's move on into the 2000s. After you had trends like torture porn and J-horror and some of these other trends on movies, we now have some modern or relatively modern anthology movies. The one really that is worth checking out if you haven't, and it's so sad, the release of this, how it got so botched, is Trick or Treat, which is a great little horror anthology. It was supposed to get a theatrical release by Warner Brothers, and they screwed the pooch on it. They went direct to video. The director's from Columbus, actually, from Columbus, Ohio, writer-director. It's from Columbus, Ohio. And it's such a fantastic movie. It is such a shame it didn't get a full theatrical release, but you can check it out, and it's definitely worth looking at. And that's Trick or Treat. What do you want to say about Trick or Treat?
Oh, it was a fantastic movie, and I didn't like Anna Paquin at the time. For some reason, I didn't like her from the X-Men movies until I saw True Blood. So going back to this movie, I love seeing her in this movie. The movie itself, it just reminds me of the heyday of these anthology stories, or what I remember growing up. Yeah. And it was definitely creepy, but also humorous. Mm-hmm. Also, the irony was still there. So this is definitely one of the best I've ever seen. Yeah. Up there with Creepshow.
Yeah, it's probably the template that people are going to look back on if we continue to get a little more of anthology horror in the next couple of years. I think that's the one that people are going to point to as one of the more influential ones that kind of set the tone, although there's some other ones. And we got two more to talk about real quick that I think are just worth checking out that are a very different toned movies. You got first one is Chillerama, which came out last year. And this is less a horror film as it is an homage, a comedy homage to these movies, and similar in tone to the setup of the Drive-In Horror Show, which I mentioned earlier. But this one it's a drive-in movie, and each episode is directed by a different director, and they do some pretty wild and crazy and extreme stuff in this.
Oh, absolutely hilarious. Diary and Frankenstein is perfect.
Oh, so
it's the same writer and director of the Hatchet series and Frozen. Mm-hmm. Adam Green, I believe. That was absolutely hilarious. I keep calling it the sperm one.
Let's give it respect it deserves. Wadzilla.
Wadzilla. That was creepy, but very fun. Movie, and then there's also a gay story in between.
Yeah, Wadzilla is about a super sperm that attacks the city.
Yeah,
friend of the show Buell was a special effects technician on that, so he is the official sperm donor on that movie.
The movie is absolutely hilarious. I 100% agree. I 100% recommend this movie.
Yeah. And what's neat is they hit all the different sort of eras. You know, Wadzilla's kind of based on the 50s monster movies. I Was a Teenage Werebear is based on the Beach Blanket Bingo movies from the 60s. And they've got this sort of snippet of a movie called Deathication, which is really hilarious, but it's sort of based on the gonzo 70s horror movies with a little bit of William Castle thrown in. They've got Zombie Movie, which is about zombies. B movie with the letter B, sort of like the B movie instead of the A film. And Diary of Anne Frankenstein is a throwback to the 40s monster movies, the Frankenstein movies. What's so fantastic about that is they have Joel David Moore, playing Hitler, and he's the most absurd Hitler ever. And Kristen Klebb, who was Hitler's lover?
In real life?
Yeah. Eva Braun, isn't that her name?
Eva Braun.
Yeah, and so she plays her, and she's all sexed up and everything. She speaks German. They had everybody speaking German, except Joel David Moore didn't speak a lick of German. What they did is all of his dialogue as Hitler, they have him saying the most obnoxiously offensive. Did you listen to this on the commentary?
No, I didn't hear the commentary, but I just listened to it as every time he said no or stop.
Yeah.
I forgot what the word was. It was something else that was just outrageous.
Well, yeah, like one of these, he's like, whatever he says, they said, well, let's have you say in German, I have the smallest penis in the world. It's like a tiny little wriggling worm. And that's what he says in German. And they put subtitles on of I'm the greatest dictator ever or something like that. And if you know any German, it's the most hilarious thing. And even if you just know bits and pieces of German, you're like, I recognize that word. And that's not what he said. So if you speak German, it's worth watching for
Nine.
Alone. So, yeah. So, yeah, Chillerama, hilarious movie. Not exactly scary. But the one that kind of kicked us off, and because I've had Steve on before, and we've ranted about how much we hate found footage movies, I thought it was interesting. I think it would be worth talking about VHS because this is the one that's kind of brought back horror anthologies recently. Again, directed by several different directors are involved in the film. And so each one gets their own segment. And it is a found footage movie. It all takes place on this VHS tape that's had different things taped over each other. I actually have to say I kind of like this movie.
Well, I didn't kind of like it. I actually loved this movie. It takes a little while to get into, but the found footage genre that we both don't like very much. So it does take a little while to get into, but then you just see one genre after another genre after another genre, different genres being placed into this and wrapped around a pretty decent story and pretty good acting. I really like this movie, and you just have to give it a chance. You have to let it go, keep it playing, and all the way through it, it just gets progressively better.
What I liked about it was, it like I said, with something like Creepshow, which burns through five stories in 2 hours, if you don't like what you're seeing in the movie, in a couple minutes you're going to get a new story. And all the stuff I hate about found footage in the short form, in that 20-minute segment or 10-minute segment of a short story, it's forgivable because you can intellectually conceptualize somebody running a camera for 10 minutes, 10, 20 minutes. I can't – the whole thing of people running a camera forever, you know, climbing across New York as a monster's attacking the city just gets a little silly. But it works better. And even if it's shaky, even if you go through all that shaky cam stuff, the style of each of these segments are different even within the found footage style.
Absolutely. And my phone dies in 50 minutes. I don't know how these people get this much footage. Did you know that one of the segments of that movie is called Tuesday the 17th?
Oh, I think I noticed that, yeah.
How awesome is that?
That's great. Well, there was an old movie called Saturday the 14th, and that was
with Richard Benjamin.
Yeah. Wow. Boy, you know immediately, didn't you?
Yeah, I kind of. There's a little story behind that.
You probably have a DVD of Transylvania 6-5000 lying around your house somewhere.
No, I just had a little crush on him when I was a kid.
Well, yeah.
When I was a kid, so I knew everything about Richard Benjamin.
That's who you had a crush on?
I was a kid. That and Michael J. Fox, okay?
Well, Michael J. Fox is a good-looking guy. Richard Benjamin's kind of dorky. Wasn't he in, like, Love at First Bite?
And he was in Love at First Bite, yes.
He was in Westworld.
He was also in Westworld.
He's killed in Westworld. He's, like, got this big, huge, honking nose, and he's sort of like the lawyer that somebody's sister marries. So.
So you're saying I have bad taste.
I think you do.
Actually, I haven't seen him in a while. If he's still alive, I don't know.
I can't get behind that. Childhood crush of Richard Benjamin.
All right, Michael J. Fox.
I could buy you having a crush on Joel David Moore as Hitler. But...
Oh, yeah, I was a kid, okay?
Work on that, would you?
I was a kid, and the Fall Guy. Not the Fall Guy, the Fall Guy's second man.
Lee Majors?
No, the Fall Guy's second hand man.
Oh. Wait, the guy with the hat? Isn't he kind of like the guy from Smokey and the Bandit?
Who was in the truck? I don't remember. And I can't believe I'm revealing all this.
Yeah, you're not making the case for yourself, sir.
No.
You're like, I had a guy, a friend of mine, he was like hot for Martha Plimpton. I'm like, Martha Plimpton? You mean
that
ugly girl from Goonies? What?
Oh, I've only seen that once when I was a kid.
Yeah, she was in Parenthood, too. She's, like, nasty looking. She's in Raising Hope. Did you ever watch Raising Hope?
The mother?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, no, it's not a good thing. Anyways.
So Tuesday the 17th.
Tuesday the 17th. Which episode was that? Was that the them going in the house?
No, the woods.
Oh, yeah, that one's a cool one.
Which makes sense. She's bringing them out to the woods to
If you haven't seen it, this is not – I want to be relatively spoiler-free. For VHS especially because it just recently has been out on demand. So it's not like, you know, if you haven't watched Creepshow, you know.
They're just camping.
Yeah, they're just camping. They're telling secrets.
They're visiting Tucker.
Is there anything else you want to add on these found footage? These are the ones, like I said, the ones we're not recommending. Don't watch Nightmares. Don't watch From Whisper to the Screen. And don't watch Tales from the Hood. But the rest of them, check them out because I think those are good movies.
Well, I recommend an old short called Bobby. It's from an old anthology story from the 1970s, which I didn't get a chance to get the name of it, but they redid that one called Bobby in Trilogy of Terror Part 2, which is also a TV movie, a made-for-TV movie. So I'd recommend that one, but it's Bobby is a kid that gets brought back to life by his mother, but it might, you know, not be the same kid that had died.
Oh, somebody didn't read Pet Sematary.
Or, yeah, watch the movie. No, that's the only other one, though. That everything else you pretty much covered that all my favorites.
Excellent. Well, we're going to get going now for this episode of Fat Guys, the Movie Second Reel. Thank you so much, Steve, for being on the show again. And we will definitely have you on in the future.
All right, thanks.